The House Committee on Transportation and Economic Development will come to order. Good morning, everyone. This morning, we've been delaying while we wait for, Patrick, I hope I have this right, the revenue statement on 4028.
Dash four, Mr.
On the dash fours. And also the fiscal on the dash ones on 4150. So let's start with 4031 and reopen the public hearing on 4031. Patrick.
I think, Mr. Chair, we heard this measure yesterday. Mr. Chair, this is the one that prohibits owner and outdoor advertising sign from removing the sign from a site without first allowing the landowner to purchase the sign in cases where it no longer conforms to applicable ordinances or the lease expires or is terminated. It would provide that the sign owner is to be eligible for a relocation credit for a sign sold to a landowner if the sign and permit meet the requirements for motorist information signs. The measure has an effective date 91st day following adjournment signing die, Mr. Chair.
No amendments.
And arriving right on time is one of our two witnesses, Amy Joyce and Dave Barrow. So if they would come up, we could hear what they have to say.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Dave Barrows. I'm here today representing the Oregon Outdoor Advertising Association. The one you really want to hear from. I'd like to just make three or four points, if I may, Mr. Chairman. Coming out of the three appearances that the proponents of this bill have had before this committee and the time that we spent with you yesterday. Number one, this bill really has very little to do with landowners. This is a bill that is about a large company with a national footprint trying to come into Oregon with kind of a free pass. 40 years ago, this legislature and the representing the citizens of Oregon and the sign companies that were here doing business entered into kind of a compact in which Oregon legislature decided the way it wanted to make sure that they complied with the Lady Bird Act, put a cap on the number of permits in the state. Basically, it was the number of signs that were in existence at that time. There are about 13 or 14 companies doing business in the state, Mr. Chairman, and the only one that has come to you and asked you for this change is the company called Total. That's their right to do. I don't decry them doing it. I just want to make certain you understand that this is not, if this was about somehow the landowners being unfairly dealt with, we'd have landowners in here. We don't have landowners. We have Mr. Joe Weston's person, but other than that, we don't have any landowners. Number two. The question has come up about whether there will be additional permits created under this bill. I think it's universally agreed upon, but you'll hear from Ms. Joyce about that. It is our view that when a landowner or company number two, acting through the landowner, purchases the sign, that the company built a sign, went through the permitting process, spent all the money, took all the chances, they get to take a relocation credit with them when their sign is taken away, when the ownership of the sign is taken away from them. That means you have a sign up there that doesn't have a permit, and we assume that the landowner or whoever is assisting them would have to get a permit in order to have a legal sign in Oregon. A sign without a permit is illegal in this state. So it's our belief that they would have to go buy a credit someplace, or a new credit would have to be created. The question also has been raised about whether or not the at the time of renewal of a lease on a non-conforming sign, that somehow the billboard company has its hands around the throat of the landowner and is able to explain to the landowner that you take what I offer you, because if you don't, I'll take the sign down and you can't build another sign there. That is inaccurate. Mr. Doherty, at the January hearing on this discussion on this bill, said that as little as a half of the rental rate for a billboard is what companies offer at the time of renewal on a non-conforming sign. That is just not accurate, Mr. Chairman. That may be what his company offers, but you heard your testimony yesterday, and all the companies in the Oregon Outdoor Advertising Association have agree with the idea that in actuality, because the company is so anxious to keep the sign in place, that it actually increases the rent to the landowner. And we have people in the room who would be happy to come up and talk about that. And I want to emphasize that, because that's not something in Ms. Joyce's purview. The rents go up. Fourthly, there's going to be a cost of administration for this. Who's going to pay for that? Who's going to check these contracts? Who's going to check the new permits? The sign administration, which Ms. Joyce used to head, is a very small division inside ODOT. And a bill like this will create additional costs and for administration and for enforcement. They don't have enough people now to enforce, and as a result, we have in this state today, because of that Supreme Court decision, which some of you may remember that were around in that bill. Representative Reed, I know, does, because he spent a whole interim agonizing about what to do about it as a co-chair of a task force. There were a number of rogue operators that just didn't even bother to go near ODOT. They just built signs. They're illegal. But ODOT doesn't have the staff, even though the industry has voluntarily agreed to have their permit fees and all the fees they pay to the sign division doubled 2 years ago. And so how does this get enforced? Who deals with the cost of administration? Another point, Mr. Chairman, is this committee, then chaired by Representatives Benson Reed, during the discussions on the digital billboard last session, specifically asked the proponents of this legislation to meet with the rest of the industry and see if they could work something out. There has been no effort on the part of that group to approach us. As a matter of fact, Mr. Doherty and all the rest of the folks from the sign industry were in a meeting in December with ODOT to talk in the ODOT building to talk about a provision of the digital bill dealing with how do public service announcements and announcements of we get out the vote and those kind of things. How do those get accomplished? How does that work? And you gave the travel council the direction to put that together. They're all in the room. Nobody approached anybody to say, let's talk about trying to figure out a way, if there's a way to fix this bill. Lastly, Mr. Chairman, I want to, at the end, I'm going to ask the committee assistant administrator to pass out two documents. One, the first one will look like this. It's by Ms. Jill Gelino, the attorney for the association, who testified yesterday, and this is her response to some of the suggestions made by the proponent's counsel. Ms. Gelino did not spend her time in front of you trying to qualify herself, but I will tell you she is one of the premier land use attorneys in this state. Regardless of how you feel about the Big Look committee, and there are those that thought it was fine and some who didn't think it was so fine, she was one of the very few attorneys that the governor appointed to that effort. That's who she is. Also going to give you a document that looks like this. This is from an appraiser in Los Angeles, a lot of work in billboards. And her characterization is that Mr. Green, the person who testified yesterday, as she puts it, is inaccurate in his characterization of the value of a, quote, left-behind billboard, unquote, on a number of levels. I would urge you to look at the letter from Donna Desmond, because it really does point out that billboards are quite different than other pieces of real property. And I also want to just close, Mr. Chairman, by saying the question was raised about how billboards are taxed. They are taxed because the Department of Revenue has told all the county appraisers to tax them as real property. This is an absolute. There is no question about it. There's no anybody who suggested that somehow its personality is inaccurate. It is real property, and it is so taxed. I appreciate very much the committee's time, and obviously be glad to answer any questions, but at this point I think it's probably more productive for you to hear from Ms. Joyce. Thank you.
Thank you. Amy.
Co-Chair Bence, Co-Chair Hunt, and members of the committee, Amy Joyce from the Department of Transportation. First, let me apologize for being late to committee. I was testifying in Judiciary earlier this morning. I passed out some written testimony, and I was here for yesterday's hearing and listened to the testimony there, and I obviously missed whatever was said already this morning. But to summarize, you've already heard extensively about what the bill does, so I'll touch on a few points that the department wants to get onto the record in terms of how the department interprets the bill. First is the much discussion about whether the remaining sign structure would be entitled to a brand new permit under the cap. The department's interpretation is that no, that sign structure would not be entitled to a new sign permit under the cap. And that's based on the context of the OMIA, which says that a sign that was legal on a particular date in 2007 when the new legislation was passed was entitled to a permit. And that thereafter, the system involves the relocation system under the cap and replace system. Mm-hmm. So under the context of the rest of the OMIA, that sign structure has already received the one permit it's entitled to. And under the system involved in this bill, when the sort of former sign owner, the sign company, strips that state permit off, as is provided for under the bill, that's the one permit it was entitled to. For that sign structure to remain there and remain as a legal outdoor advertising sign, billboard, for our purposes, the landowner or a sign company on its behalf would have to apply to the department for what's called a relocation permit and bring an existing permit or credit to the game to trade that in and to use on that sign. So that's the department's interpretation of what the bill would do there based on the context of the rest of the law. Originally, when I analyzed this bill, I was thinking of it in terms of that in every situation there would be a second sign company sort of in the wings waiting to apply for a permit to put it onto this sign, so we wouldn't run into situations where the sign would remain but without a state permit. But as I looked at the bill some more, I realized that really the bill deals with one half of an equation. The half of the equation it deals with is a method to strip that permit off the sign so the sign company can keep it. And the sign remains with the landowner for the landowner to do something with the sign. But what the bill doesn't cover is what happens next. So as a practical matter, there are probably three things that can happen next. One is there's a sign company waiting in the wings. They use a relocation credit, get a relocation permit, and put a state permit on that sign, and it continues to be used as outdoor advertising, selling ad space. A second thing that could happen with that sign structure is that the sign remains without a state permit, and it is used not as outdoor advertising. And under the law, that means it's at the location of some kind of business or public goings-on, and there's no compensation being exchanged, so there's no ad space being sold. In that situation, the sign does not need a state outdoor advertising sign permit, and the structure would remain and be legal, provided it meets some very basic safety requirements under the law. The third practical end to this transaction is that the sign would remain and continue as outdoor advertising but not have a state permit on it. And in that case, the department would investigate, see what's going on, determine it really is outdoor advertising. We know it didn't have a permit, and pursue enforcement action, which would include takedown of the sign and civil penalties. So that's how the department interprets what could happen under this bill. So I think probably, you know, the rest of my the points are covered in the written testimony, and I'm available for questions. Chair Benz.
Thank you very much. Questions for this panel? Yes, Representative Nathanson.
Thank you. How much activity is the department involved in enforcing allegations of illegal signs? And if there were to be more, is there enough staffing? Does the department have staffing to do that kind of enforcement? What are the costs and so forth?
Chair Benz, Co-Chair Hunt, and Representative Nathanson, the staff of the sign department currently is, I believe, about 2.5 FTE to cover the entire state and all 8,000 miles of state highway and 1,700 or so permitted signs. One of the primary duties of the sign program is to enforce against illegal signs, and that's an activity that goes on. The system under the law to pursue an illegal outdoor advertising sign is somewhat cumbersome. It's lengthy. Once the department files a violation notice, by law, the sign stays up until there's a determination from an administrative law judge, at least. So cases are pursued. It's lengthy. But during that time, certainly the civil penalties provision are adding up on a per-day basis. But it's, the department tries to focus on illegal outdoor advertising signs that are full-blown billboards, as opposed to sort of, you know, with the mom-and-pop stuff that's, there's much more of that really that goes on typically than the actual billboards. But we try to focus on the billboards rather than the mom-and-pop stuff.
Thank you.
Further questions? Yes. Representative Wagner.
This one, first one's for Mr. Barrows. Actually, I have two. One is, do you know how many people Oregonians and landowners, Oregonians in Action represent?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Widener, the short answer to your question is I do not. I'd be happy to expand on that if permitted, but I don't want to take the committee's time.
They showed up here and testified in favor of this bill, and I know it's in the thousands. So when you said there were no landowners.
Well, with your permission, Mr. Chairman, Oregonians in Action sent out a letter to their mailing list saying, if you are a billboard sign owner, please contact us because we would like to be to look at perhaps being involved in this bill and bringing forth support from all of you, indicating that you all support this bill. As of about a week to 10 days ago, the last time we checked, they had had no responses to that letter from their membership. Not one. So, yes, they have a large membership, but their membership didn't take the bait.
Next question is follow-up. If I may follow up. You said that you had no notice. Did the lobbyist from approach you on the proponent side to let you know that this bill was coming or give you any heads up about it before we got here?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Widener, she did, for which I'm very grateful, and I have publicly told people and privately told people that she was very courteous in doing that, and I was very, very grateful. I would not have known about it because there had been no communication between Total and the rest of the industry, even though there were ample opportunities. There were months in which calls could have been made. There was a meeting in which they were all present, and nobody from Total bothered to talk to the rest of the industry about this legislation, even though they had been asked to do so by then co-chairs Bence and Reed. So the answer to your question is, yes, she did notify me, and again, I'm very grateful. I would not have known about it without that. And no one in the sign company business would have known about it either had she not had provided that courtesy.
Further questions? See none. Thank you very much.
Can I just conclude by saying, Mr. Chairman, this bill has a lot of unanswered questions still floating around about it. And I would strongly urge that this committee again suggest to the parties involved that they try to figure out if there's a way they can come to an accommodation and an agreement. I appreciate the opportunity to add that.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that wants to be heard on this bill today? Then I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 4031. And I'm just going to say a few words about the bill. I've decided not to give it a work session. My thinking is this. The bill will affect 55 to 65% of the signs in Oregon. The bill has, the case has not been made, in my opinion, that the current situation is so unfair that it warrants immediate response. And I must say, having spent not a huge amount of time, but a considerable amount of time working through these issues, that they are incredibly complex and are not easily resolved. I'm not saying that the proponents should give up. I'm simply saying that I don't understand the consequences of what this bill would do. And I have spent a considerable amount of time trying to figure that out. So at the risk of having folks say that Chair Bence's mental abilities are inadequate, nonetheless, I don't understand the consequences of it. So for that reason, I have chosen not to give it a work session. I don't know if you want to be heard on this or not, Co-Chair Hunt.
I don't, but it looks like Representative Widener.
Representative Widener.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. After hearing from the department, from Amy when she came up and spoke to, you know, I'm in support of what you're saying. It sounds like we should have something set up in place where something happens when that lease is up. So maybe there is another party who's negotiating for the spot so we know that it's not going to sit there vacant. So there is a plan or an action and it's not just set in limbo. I think if that's corrected, we might have a very good bill here that actually reaches out to both sides and kind of fixes one of the problems that we've created by creating the sign credits that we've created. But I think it was clear by her testimony that we're not going to have more signs because we have a cap on the credits that are out in the system, but I think that would take care of the limbo situation that we'd be sitting in, and I think that would probably be the one fix that we need to take care of in this legislation to bring back in next session.
Anyone further on this? With that, I'm going to move, I think, Patrick, let me correct it, that we're now prepared to go to 4150.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
That and I think that is a, we go through the public hearing or through the work session?
Mr. Chair, there's nobody signed up, so I believe you can just open and then reclose the public hearing, or it sounded like you had some questions about that bill. You could open a public hearing and take testimony. There's only nobody signed up, but the department isn't going to answer your questions, Mr. Chair.
Okay, so let's open a public hearing on 4150. And who do we have here Sean here?
Did you close the public hearing, the other one?
Yeah, I did. Okay. Yeah, I did. You came probably a little prematurely.
Good morning.
And John, before we are asking you a few questions, Patrick, perhaps you can remind everyone what this bill is, 4150.
Co-Chair Bentz, Co-Chair Hunts, for the record.
Just a second. So do you want to go from here?
Yeah.
Looking for this one?
No, just trying to find my stuff. Sorry, Mr. Chair, I got it.
Okay. Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Ready as always. Almost. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ready as always. House Bill 4150, we heard this yesterday. It's a bill that expands the definition of qualified businesses eligible for credit guarantees from the Credit Enhancement Fund to include non-traded sector businesses. It sunsets July 1st, 2015 as an emergency clause. We have dash one amendments which address a drafting error that was in the original bill. We have the fiscal, the minimal fiscal impact for the dash ones and the no revenue impact for the dash ones, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Patrick. Now, John, go ahead. Sorry.
Thank you. Co-Chair Bentz, Co-Chair Hunt. For the record, my name is John Saris. I'm the Business Services Manager at the Oregon Business Development Department. The bill that's before you today essentially is going to allow the Credit Enhancement Fund to provide guarantees to non-traded sector companies that are located in what are designated as non-distressed counties. Essentially, this amendment is going to allow the agency to enroll more loans that is going to help us meet the leverage requirements associated with the federal grant that the agency received in 2011 from the U.S. Department of Treasury.
Other questions for John? I have several. The amount, I think I heard yesterday that the amount of money received from the federal government was around $10 million, and this had been placed into the fund and was available, but it was sitting there languishing, and by expanding the scope of those to whom these guarantees could be extended, we would have a greater chance of utilizing that money. Is that a correct?
Co-Chair Bentz, members of the committee, there is $16.5 million that was associated with this grant, $10 million of which was transferred into the Credit Enhancement Fund. The funds are being used currently. There is additional opportunity to leverage the fund by expanding the eligible industries. And so there are funds that are able to be deployed immediately, and this will help facilitate that.
I think the issue that Representative Lindsay raised was that the concern that having had this bill originally directed toward the traded sector business, why expand it? And there were reasons, of course, and he set them forth, why we'd want to use that money for those sector businesses. Did you agree with what he said? In other words, I think his point was that the traded sector investment creates more jobs than a retail investment. And I'm just curious, if that is the case, then what is it that prompts the department to want to expand to what we might say would be lower leverage jobs or lower leverage opportunities?
Co-Chair, members of the committee, I think that that Representative Lindsay is correct, that we do recognize that traded sector jobs do create both higher waged jobs in the community, and that is going to continue to be the focus and the target of this program. What we are experiencing and what we have seen over the course of the last 3 years is the recession has been affecting small businesses, both traded sector and non-traded sector, is that these companies still need capital. And so while we have a limited duration associated with this provision, it will allow more companies to access these funds. One thing that's important to recognize is that while we have been able to assist both traded sector and the retail and service industries for the last 3 years, less than 30% of our total portfolio at this time is associated with non-traded sector activities. We anticipate that that trend will continue for the duration of this temporary bill, and that there are adequate funds to serve the needs of the traded sector industries that we're targeting. If we do get to a point where the funds are reaching their limits, if you will, we have the ability to basically target the funds back to traded sector and restrict that.
I guess the question would be, as you look and weigh and balance these investment opportunities or these choices, what do you look at? Because if we expand it to these other non-traded sector areas, how do you measure then which is the best place to put it? Because is it by the number of jobs, or what? Where is this list of criteria that you apply once this has been expanded to include both?
Co-chair, members of the committee, the program does within itself have some preferences associated with it. Industries, traded sector, small businesses, rural communities, et cetera, are going to have preferences. What we look at when we're evaluating these are their ability to repay and for the loan to be able to be repaid as part of the guarantee. So we're actually underwriting the entire project. We will continue to evaluate the portfolio to make sure that we have the right balance, if you will. And I feel like I'm not answering your question. I apologize.
Yeah. I think you are. I'm curious because we've been working on the Oregon Investment Act and the issues there are very similar, and the question is how do those to whom we give these funds weigh and balance and evaluate and ultimately decide who they're going to help or who we are going to help and who we aren't. And so I just wanted to understand if we have maybe the simple answer is you have funds that are languishing and they need to be put to work. Is that the case, or is this simply wanting a broader field within which to invest a limited amount of resources?
Chair, we do have funds that need to go to work. We do have $10 million that needs to be deployed in this particular program and begin leveraging it to meet the federal funds requirement. We do due diligence on every credit that we enroll in this program. We actually have finance teams that actually underwrite the loans themselves and the lines of credit, much like a lender does. So we evaluate them for collateral, cash flow, the credit of the borrower, et cetera, just like the bank will, or the lender.
Thank you. Further questions for John? Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So is it fair to say, John, that just to clarify some of the things you said and make sure that I'm getting it clearly, that this temporary situation as a result of the federal investment and the challenging circumstances in Oregon, that this proposal is essentially temporary as a result of those things, and that it is not a permanent diversion from a focus on traded sector?
Co-chairs, Representative Reed, you're correct. This is a temporary allowable use to expand the program, and it's not a divergence from the initial intent of the bill. And I believe the introduction of the Dash 1 amendments actually help retain the initial language that created the bill and the intent of the program.
Thanks.
Further questions for John? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I think we are ready for a motion.
Oh, wait, it's still in public hearing.
I'm sorry. Patrick, what?
We're still in public hearing.
I'm sorry. We're not ready for a motion. Anyone else want to be heard on this bill? Seeing no one, I'm going to close. close the public hearing and open a work session.
Mr. Chair. Now. I move the dash one amendments to House Bill 4150, dated January 27th, 2012.
So move that we adopt the dash one amendments dated 4150, dated 1/27/12. Is there discussion? None. Is there objection? Seeing none, the dash one amendments are adopted.
Chair, I move House Bill 4150 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
It's been moved 4150 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Seeing none, is there objection? Seeing none. So moved, we need a carrier.
I think the chief sponsors are Representative Holby and Representative Reed.
Co-carriers?
That sounds fine. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And the co-carriers will be Representative Holby and Representative Reed. All right, so that leaves us with, let's go to, are we ready for this?
We are not.
So
I would recommend, we've been told, should I say this loud enough for everybody here?
Please.
Mr. Chair, we've been informed by the Legislative Revenue Office that we can expect the revenue impact statement for the dash four amendment somewhere after 9:30.
Two.
For House Bill 4028. So I would suggest, if it's the chair's desire to do so, that we could recess till 9:30.
No objection. We're in recess till 9:30.
Awesome.
Good.
So sometimes.
calling the House Committee on Transportation and Economic Development back to order. And Patrick, let's see, we just have one 4028, is that right? So I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 4028. Patrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 4028 is the measure that authorizes additional body bond authority for Connect Oregon Special Public Works Fund, Community College Capital Construction, and Oregon Growth Account. We have in hand now the Dash 4 Amendment. The Dash 4 Amendment designates a measure of the Transportation Economic Development Act of 2012, deletes amendments to ORS 285B551, which I'm told are technical changes that Legislative Council and Legislative Fiscal collaborated on. They're not necessary amendments from the original bill. Makes specific allocations to 17 community colleges for specified projects, requires progress report to be submitted to the Legislative Assembly by the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development on the status of the funded projects, and deletes the section allocating $20 million to the Oregon Growth Account. Mr. Chair. Oh, and we have in hand a fiscal impact light and a revenue impact statement for the Dash 4 amendments.
Thank you, Patrick. Co-Chair Hunt.
Thank you. So I just might... No, just so everybody's clear. The good news is the bill, because of that, eliminating all that extra language that was found to be unnecessary, the bill will be much shorter and therefore much clearer. I just wanted to make sure that we're all clear. In Section 1, the $10 million remains in there for the Connect Oregon 4 round. In Section 3, the $10 million remains in there for sewer and water infrastructure projects under the Special Public Works Fund. And Section 4, that's the main guts of this Dash 4 amendment, is it changes what was a generic $10 million for workforce development projects at community colleges to the explicit list we saw yesterday, which adds up to a little over $9.6 million of specifically delineated projects, so we know exactly what we're buying at each of the 17 of Oregon's community colleges. It also, you'll notice, on the last part, it adds in a suggestion that Representative Nathanson made in the hearing about a progress report back to the legislature that will specifically delineate the construction hours worked, the jobs created, the percentage of jobs performed, fulfilled by Oregon residents, and the specific description of the workforce need addressed by those projects. So it does, the biggest substantive change is taking out that $20 million that would have helped provide seed funds for the Oregon Investment Act. Based on the amendments to House Bill 4040 we adopted yesterday, the timelines for the Oregon Investment Act, at least in terms of a expenditure authority, really have moved out far enough that I think that will still be a good option to do in 2013. Unlike these other three, where they can actually get going more immediately, even if we'd allocated money to the Oregon Investment Act now, those dollars couldn't have been functionally expended before the end of the biennium anyway. So I think that's still, in my mind, I think probably in all of our minds, a worthy need. And because we're not going right up to the line of the lottery bonding authority, there will still be additional capacity when you all come back in 2013.
Mr. Co-Chair, further remarks on this?
Are you looking for a motion?
I think I'm looking for a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 4 amendments to House Bill 4028, dated February 8th, 2012.
It's been moved that we adopt the Dash 4 is to HB 4028, dated 2812. Is there a discussion? Yes, Representative Widener.
Mr. Chair, I'm glad that we made these changes because I think we were pushing the limit on maxing out the credit card, and I think 2013 will give us a chance to evaluate because we still have downtrends that are happening in the economy. They're thinking things have flattened out, but at least it gives us 12 months to see what's really happening in the economy, because I'd hate to see us max out every option we have, and these are good projects that will be put to use right away, and a lot of our communities need, especially smaller communities, the water and sewer infrastructure, and I know our community colleges and Connect Oregon, those are very important things that will help our economy get started. So I'm proud to support these amendments and sending it to Ways and Means and having them take a look at it, but I think we did the right thing with these Dash 4 amendments.
Thank you, Representative Widener. Further remarks? Just a couple. My initial thought on this had been, given the cautious approach by the Treasurer's Office to not advance the bill, but after quite a bit of discussion with folks on Ways and Means and with others on this committee, it seems to me best that we go ahead and send it down for their review. The investments here are excellent and the type that we would want in economically challenged times such as this, and the fact we've backed $20 million away, as you say, Representative Widener, is a good thing from the edge, although I think Ways and Means is best suited to make those decisions. So if there's no further discussion, is there any objection to the Dash 4 amendment? Seeing none, the Dash 4s are adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 4028 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
It's moved that House Bill 4028 as amended go to the floor with a due pass recommendation with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Is there a discussion? Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My apologies for stepping out for a moment. I may have missed something similar, but I know the Dash 4 amendments are removing the amount to the Oregon Growth Fund, Growth Board, and I think that's a function of the timing and practical implications, but I hope that the good discussion and reaction we've had in this committee and others about the Investment Act will continue, and that group comes back to this committee and elsewhere in the legislature with a plan that everyone can get behind, and that we'll be in a position to support that plan the next time we're all together in the 2013 session.
Thank you. Further comments? Yes, sir.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And I'm probably not alone in this, been getting some questions on the issue of Connect Oregon grants, of which I am a strong supporter of Connect Oregon and a strong supporter of our rail investments. On the issue of to what degree, what percentage, whether it's 90 to 100, goes to local governments and not-for-profit entities versus what portion goes to for-profit companies. And I think this is a similar issue that we've had to face in other areas from the film tax credit, et cetera. To what degree do we get involved in that element of economic development, which includes grants to for-profit entities. And had a conversation with Co-Chair Hunt in the hallway. And I hope we understand we want to move the bill today. And I wasn't even aware that among the grants were going to for-profit companies until very recently. I hope we will look at either an opportunity in this committee in a bill with a relevant relating to clause, or in a budget note to Ways and Means, to clarify and maybe amplify our scrutiny a bit to demonstrate that we're at least aware that when we're making grants, as opposed to loans, or as Tobias is working on in the Oregon Investment Act, getting a cut of the deal, that we are manifesting our fiduciary responsibility particularly carefully in that context. And I don't think our fiduciary responsibility means that we should never give a grant to a for-profit entity, right? If that means that it leverages something we wouldn't get otherwise, I mean, it's not my favorite game to play in the economic development sphere, but I recognize it's one of the things that we do. But I do think we should be particularly vigilant, and I hope that we will take that step. I'm going to vote yes on the bill, and I really appreciate all the work that's been done, and I hope that before we get out this month, and as soon as possible, I appreciate Representative Hunt's sharing, sort of wanting to think about this and talk about it. I hope that we'll do something to at least manifest some sensitivity.
Thank you. Yes, Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I support this bill also. I'm very pleased about it, and I want to express appreciation for the content of the amendment as well. And in response to what Representative Smith was saying, I'll just mention two phrases very briefly. One is public benefit. If we're clear about what the desired public benefit is, that's helpful and necessary. And then what do we do about clawback provisions when public benefit has not been achieved?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think one of the greatest things about Connect Oregon has been, as we've now been through three and a half rounds, I guess, as we're midstream through round four, is with each round there has been a strengthening and a tightening and a focusing, and I think the the program and the benefits of it have gotten better with each round. And so I think it's a great conversation to have this week, this month, this interim, not only for the legislature to look at the statutes involved, but also for the committees evaluating the projects to be looking at how we do get the biggest ROI. I mean, because ultimately, at the end of the day, whether it's going to a local government, a nonprofit, a for-profit entity, how we get the biggest bang for the buck in terms of enhanced freight mobility, in terms of jobs, in terms of investment drawn into Oregon. I think it's a very legitimate conversation, and I think the good news is the program has been strong and made stronger each round because there's been an openness to have that conversation.
Well put. Further comments?
Just one very quickly.
Yes.
Where is that, Nathan said, if you'd be willing to engage in that conversation in the intervening hours and days, it'd be very valuable.
Just a couple of things. I think your point is extremely well taken, Representative Smith, and the hope, of course, that Representative Reed and I share on the Investment Act is that some of these investments will be drawn into that broader discussion. So we're probably hoping too much for that bill, but that is one of the things that will come up. Further discussion? Seeing none, would the clerk call the roll?
Representative Lindsay?
Excused.
Representative Nathanson?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Luebner?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Reed?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Sheehan?
Yes.
Co-Chair Hunt?
Aye.
Co-Chair Benz?
Aye. With that, the HB 4028 passes and it's off to Ways and Means and Mail Carrier. And I think, colleagues, that exhausts our agenda for the day. Patrick?
Sure. We are out of bills.
We're out of bills. We're adjourned.